Joining us now is our friend. He's an associate professor as well at Cedarville University of International Studies. As I understand it, as well known as a snappy dresser. Dr. Glenn Dewar, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. That's very nice introduction. Appreciate it.
True.
You sound like a snappy dresser. Are your outfits important when you go out?
Although I will say my wife dresses me because I have some color blindness issues. And so just, okay, this works well together. But yeah, it's a big deal. So just to look presentable. So.
Now, today, as we discuss, we're going to talk about Queen Elizabeth II and her recent passing. Mm-hmm. In case someone can't tell, you're British, right?
Born and raised, yes, but 10 years of Canada in there, and I've been in the United States for 16, so my accent's maybe a little more muddled than some others. But yes,
so,
born and raised in the United Kingdom.
So I would imagine that you are still, whether or not you're a national studies professor, you're still paying attention to British politics and the British royal family to some sense based on your legacy and your family, right?
Absolutely. There's a long history there. My grandfather on my maternal side was a policeman in London in the 1950s and was part of the security detail for the father, King George VI. As well as for Queen Elizabeth II. I mean, not kind of in a major role, but you know, playing the part on the streets and crowd control and things of that nature. My granny was a part of the auxiliary territorial service, which was effectively a women's army during World War II.
Wow.
And Queen Elizabeth ended up joining that in 1945, mm-hmm. As well as a 19-year-old. And so there are these kind of connections there. And then my dad, who is from the United States, but worked in central London, saw her numerous times on the way to open parliament and things of that nature. And I even saw her as a boy, too, around Hyde Park, which is a major park, kind of like Central Park in New York City, mm-hmm. of London. And the Queen used to ride her carriage in those days around Buckingham Palace out to Hyde Park. And so I got to see her once upon a time. And so, yeah, there's a neat familial legacy there.
So then give us a sense of how big of a deal it is, the passing of Queen Elizabeth II, for the British people.
Politically and culturally, it's a massive issue, because if we take someone who was born in 1952, so 70 years old today, mm-hmm. they have only ever known one monarch. And if we think about the way that that's been just very steady in their lives, the Queen always acting in the duty of the United Kingdom and really the Commonwealth of Nations around the world as well, the passing is of a massive magnitude. There's still a massive, massive reverence there. Politically, the United Kingdom is a constitutional monarchy. So even though the actual political power resides with the Prime Minister and her cabinet, in this case of Liz Truss, there are still numerous ways that the Queen, that the sitting monarch, influences things. Royal assent is needed, for example, to have any bill become a law. The Queen also meets weekly, at least when it's in session and they're not traveling, with the Prime Minister. So even though it's a non-political role generally, it's still an ear of history and of lineage, where the Prime Minister and the Queen, in this case, met, and the Queen oversaw 15 different Prime Ministers, all the way from Winston Churchill's second stint in office from 1951 to 1955. All the way through this past week with Liz Truss as the 15th. So it's very significant. It has a major diplomatic role as well. Not only is the monarch over the four constituent countries of the United Kingdom, England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, but is also head of state of 14 other countries, some in the Caribbean, some in the South Pacific. We can think of Canada, Australia, New Zealand as major examples there. And then the Commonwealth of Nations, which comprises of 56 countries that are generally former British colonies in a voluntary association that do a number of different things around the world. So it's a pretty big role. And so the passing of Queen Elizabeth II has really touched a lot of people, and also many people outside of the Commonwealth of Nations, too.
How well do you think Charles is going to be received as king by the British people?
On the one hand, I think most British people realize that, really no one can replace Queen Elizabeth II. She's just a once-in-a-lifetime type of leader, type of individual. And so regardless of who came after her, just no one was ever going to fill those shoes. Mm-hmm. Charles III is certainly a much more controversial figure. He's been much less liked by the public generally. He's been more assertive in his own opinions politically. And so I think if he dials that back, if he sets himself on duty much more strongly, then he'll be well received. And I think in general, a lot of people have said, you know, he's waited his turn. He's now the king. He's not going to be in forever, but he's also someone that has that history and heritage that can move things forward. And I think in some ways, even the Crown, if we think of the TV series, has kind of softened the image a little bit. You can see behind the curtain just a bit, and to say, okay, you know, he faced some challenges in life, and we can understand a few more things as a result. So certainly his legacy will not be that of Queen Elizabeth II. I think there's a big penchant for William to become William V at some point. But for Charles III, a lot of people are generally rallying around him, in the United Kingdom at least.
Dr. Dewar, as we discuss the passing of Queen Elizabeth II, I've heard a lot of people talk about quotes from her on her faith. And I've heard people say she's a believer. What's your take on her faith life?
Absolutely. Some context is important here, because if we back up, really, even 50 years before she was born, she was born in 1926. It's an era known as Victorian England. It's Queen Victoria is on the throne, and she reigned for almost as long as Queen Elizabeth II. But the point of that is, at that time, the United Kingdom was a very biblically literate society. And so a lot of people knew the word of God, knew turn of phrases that were connected to scripture. And that has kind of long held in the society, but has certainly fallen off as really throughout the 20th and into the 21st centuries, where the number of Christians, or at least the percentage of Christians, has become smaller in the United Kingdom, unfortunately. And so in that backdrop, the queen, the reigning monarch of the United Kingdom, is the head or a head of the Church of England, and that is known as the Anglican Church globally and the Episcopalian Church generally in the United States. And so the Queen has maintained a Christmas speech, significant Christian points within speeches, and so she's been a steady influence of Christianity, albeit perhaps more softly, throughout her reign. And so it's, I think, a key distinction, because faith tends to be more private in the United Kingdom, whereas in the United States, it's more kind of described publicly, and to be a witness and to evangelize and things of that nature. The same thing happens in the United Kingdom, but it does tend to be a more private society. And I think the Queen is evidence of that. And so I think there's a strong faith underneath there. I think there's one where she still is trying to represent all of the public, and that public has changed to some degree. But certainly she maintained the positions of the church and the tenure of the church as well. So I think certainly there's a real keys to her belief found in there. But it does take a bit of digging, and it does take a bit of cultural understanding as well.
You mentioned, I wanted to kind of circle back around to King Charles III and your mention of how people are kind of circling around him and supporting him, especially with the crown and further understanding of him and his family. But I've heard that internationally speaking, and even some British people are not too excited about him and even just about monarchy in general. How stable will his reign be, however many years it is?
It's a great question, because there are some challenges for the monarchy on the horizon. I mentioned that the king, in this case now, is head of state over 14 other countries beyond the United Kingdom. And several have said that they would consider becoming republics now that Queen Elizabeth II has passed. There's a small set of islands, Antigua and Barbuda, in the Caribbean. And the prime minister has said, within 3 years, if I'm reelected, we are going to hold a referendum on this. Several countries, by the way, have done this even under Queen Elizabeth II. Barbados became a republic last year. But it's an ongoing discussion of how historic colonies connect with the United Kingdom. And they're generally independent today. They have full self-determination, but the question is whether they want to maintain this tie at all. And so for the monarchy, there are questions there. Within the United Kingdom, it looks like the monarchy is still very strong, even in spite of growing republicanism around the world. Many countries have gotten rid of their monarchs, but in the United Kingdom, it looks like it's pretty well set. But even under Queen Elizabeth II, there were major scandals and issues. There were questions on how she reacted to especially national tragedies. And generally, in the end, the idea is that she did the right thing and she cared for people. The question is whether Charles will do the same. He's a different character. He has different ways of looking at the world. And like I said in a previous answer, I think if he becomes less of an activist and more of a steady figure overseeing the legacy and the customs and conventions of the United Kingdom, he'll be well received. If he meddles too much in what is really the elected political sphere for the House of Commons and the Prime Minister, then it could turn a bit. And so it's certainly one to watch as we move into the future.
You know, I think we can't separate necessarily the legacy and impact of colonialism from what Queen Elizabeth II did during her reign. It was so long. And there's no question about the geopolitical mess created in independence movements in the late 50s through the 70s and 80s throughout Africa and parts of Asia. So, I mean, to what impact truly will colonialism have on Queen Elizabeth II's legacy?
It's going to be multifaceted in my view because, I mean, there are Jamaican scholars, for example, that say, look, you know, the Queen is a direct descendant of some of the people that were central figures in the slave trade. You know, why not apologize for that? And so that's certainly a key one to raise. On the other hand, if we look at Queen Elizabeth II and think through what she inherited in February of 1952 when she ascended to the throne and where we are today in 2022, I mean, really, there was this very careful and gradual and graceful decolonization that we saw throughout her time. Generally, British colonies gained their independence in a stable fashion. It's hard to say that many went straight into a form of civil war, although there certainly were some. Although, in other cases, you know, take a Sri Lanka, for example, the seeds of tension were there, and then they erupted very heavily in 1983. So, you know, at what point is Queen Elizabeth connected to that is a question. But certainly, when we think about the Commonwealth of Nations, it used to be the British Empire, and then the British Commonwealth. Now it's much more kind of open and voluntary. Countries that were not British colonies have joined it, for example. The United States is not a member, so it is clearly that, you know, not all former colonies have to be connected to it. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's certainly a softer edge and image. I think a lot changed in her time, and so that will be reflected as well. But it's certainly multifaceted.
To what extent does she get credit for the decolonization, though? I mean, was it a reflection of just an era when they wanted it,
right,
or that she pursued decolonization?
Yeah, it's a tough question because she doesn't have that political power to make that kind of change. But at the same time, her tenor, her speeches reflect how things have shifted as well. And certainly there was a much more paternal way of speaking about colonies and peoples for previous monarchs that she changed. It
wow.
very much became about a shared peoples and connections and historical legacies. rather than, you know, being subjects of a an empire a long way away. And so I think in many ways, you know, we have to be careful of saying, being too critical, because she just didn't have the power to make changes. Yeah. And where she did have the power to make changes, she did. And certainly that has to be commended. But it's very, very complex. There's a great deal of challenge that comes from an era, a bygone era, where things were viewed differently. And we have significantly changed. Bear in mind that we're in the midst of a Russia invading Ukraine in 2022. There's a Genesis 3 sin nature that runs through all of us. So we have to be careful of saying, hey, in the 21st century, we're better than they were in the past.
Yeah. No, and you bring up some excellent points about the extent to which she had any authority and what she did with the authority she had. I think that's really important. So yes. Thank you for that. Again, Dr. Glenn Dewar is Associate Professor of International Studies at Cedarville University. If you want more information, go to cedarville.edu. Super easy to find. Cedarville.edu, again, recently ranked among the top colleges by U.S. News & World Report. Congratulations. And thanks again for your time today, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.